Hello and welcome to the Compliance Week podcast. I'm Joe Mott, staff writer for Compliance Week. Globalization, terrorist attacks, the digital world, and the aftermath of the Great Recession are all shaping a complex business landscape that poses unprecedented challenges and risks across all industries. In their recently published book, The New Era of Regulatory Enforcement, A Comprehensive Guide to Raising the Bar to Manage Risk, Timothy Headley, KPMG's Global Lead for Fraud Risk Management Services, and Richard Gergenti, National and America's Leader for KPMG's Forensic Advisory Service, offer an overview of the challenges companies face in conducting business in a new, oftentimes perplexing environment. They discuss the evolving government policies, strategies, and tactics that are driving enforcement activity and outline, in the book, the most effective approaches for preventing, detecting, and responding to the new risk landscape. We ask Gergenti about what inspired the book and what he and his co-author mean by the new era of regulatory enforcement.
When Tim and I finished the first book, it was 2010, published in 2011, and we were just seeing the aftermath of the financial recession with Dodd-Frank. We realized that there was going to be a lot of activity because of the enforcement powers and some of the new things, new agencies that Dodd-Frank had created. And we also wanted to take a look back at the first 10 to 15 years of the decade, because what we began to see was a pattern where certain events from 9/11 and the war on terror, particularly terrorist financing, the financial reporting crisis, which followed in the aftermath of 9/11, which really shook the capital markets, and with that came new legislation. After 9/11, we had the U.S. Patriot Act. After the financial reporting crisis, we had Sarbanes-Oxley and increased enforcement. We also saw, as a result of globalization, more activity around bribery and corruption, particularly the enforcement of the FCPA law, as well as other nations beginning to design, create, and enforce their own laws. Then the recession came, and with that, of course, came Dodd-Frank, and we were very anxious to see if we could connect the dots as to what was happening and what it meant to companies, and was there a framework that we could provide to them to help them manage through the risks and the challenges of this new era, which was both a combination of new regulations and laws, increased enforcement activity, and the way in which enforcement activity was taking place, additional resources, greater globalization, different types of tactics and strategies, much more of a focus on what companies were doing, particularly around their compliance programs. So we thought it was time to put pen to paper and consider how we could maybe explain what was going on and provide clients and others who are interested in this field ways in which you can more effectively manage the risks created. We're not just talking about hundreds of millions of dollars. We're talking about tens of billions of dollars for some of the lapses that the government has identified, everything from most recently LIBOR and Forex to tax shelters to financial reporting issues, to mortgage origination abuses. So companies in all industries were beginning to see that the penalties for lapses were becoming more severe and therefore, again, increasing the risks and challenges that they faced. And again, that, I think, was a characteristic of this new era.
Were there milestones along the way, from the Dodd-Frank Act to high-profile cases, that were a catalyst for the new era and helped define it? Gergenti responds.
What companies began to see as certain industries were hit hard, certain institutions were fined, had to subject themselves to deferred prosecutions, had to bear monitorships, had to, as part of their settlement agreements, identify areas of weakness in the their compliance programs. That, along with a series of pronouncements by the government, there were certain amendments and revisions to the federal sentencing guidelines. More recently, we've seen things like the Yates memo put a focus on individual prosecutions. We've seen new FCPA guidelines, which have identified conditions to obtain increased cooperation credit. So the government has, both through its pronouncements as well as through its settlements in almost every industry, indicated what it was looking for from a company to be identified as a good citizen. And two things were happening. One is that certain companies, as I mentioned, were being subjected to very onerous fines and penalties. But at the same time, those companies that had effective compliance programs, even though there may have been lapses, were given substantial credit and in some instances not fined or prosecuted at all because even though there was a lapse, the company's compliance program was effective. So we saw the government shaping the landscape of what they were looking for by pronouncements as well as settlements.
How has the compliance function evolved amid changing enforcement and demands for better risk management? Headley, then Grigenti, respond.
I think in the new era, fundamental change is that organizations really are beginning to understand that they will need the right governance, risk, and compliance infrastructure, and most importantly, organizational culture that will guide values-driven decision-making at all levels of the organization in a way they haven't had to do in the past. I also think they've come to understand that it will never be possible to control the behaviors of every employee or stakeholder, but making sure compliance efforts are continuously renewed and that they learn from the failures are going to be important. They'll yield tremendous benefits from paying attention to what breakdowns they do have and how they respond to that. I think there's been a sea change in how they're starting to view this.
I think the government's become more sophisticated as well. I mean, recently, the Department of Justice hired a compliance counsel, a full-time expert, to help the prosecutors in the Department of Justice with evaluations of how compliance programs are designed, implemented, and to help them evaluate the adequacy of those programs. We've also seen pronouncements from Assistant Attorney General Caldwell about what they're going to be looking for, not just simple paper program, but, you know, strong leadership. They're going to look to other messages conveyed to employees. They're going to look for senior leadership taking responsibility and oversight, clearly simple written policies and procedures, the stature of compliance within the organization, effective processes and adequacy of resources for investigating and following up on allegations and violations, monitoring and review of the effectiveness program on a periodic basis. So these are just some of the things that the government has gone into greater detail as its own thinking on compliance has evolved and indicated what they would be looking for in order to make a determination that a company had done enough.
Headley addressed the pressing issue of program effectiveness.
The challenge, in some of what you said, is that there's no universally accepted definition of compliance program effectiveness, even in the context of what the government may or may not look for, because all the frameworks out there are not terribly prescriptive in nature. But I think our book, though, and part of our thinking, Rich, early on, was that it should help organizations think about what it means to have an effective compliance program and what some of those elements might be, and put a little more prescription behind the frameworks and the guidelines that are put out by the government.
Regulators are stressing the importance of corporate culture, perhaps an amorphous term and one open to interpretation. We asked the authors how they would define it and what are the challenges to meeting regulatory expectations. While it may be easy for a regulator to evaluate policies and procedures, assessing culture may be more of a wispy moving target. Gergenti and Headley both respond.
This is the new frontier for compliance programs, and I think all of the professionals in compliance, the government, and certainly Tim and I, believe it's the focal point for any compliance program. Without a good culture within an organization, a culture of integrity, nothing matters more. So when we look at culture, I mean, there are a lot of ways to define it. It is essentially an intangible. It reflects the choices, behaviors, and values of an organization. What the organization prioritizes, how the tone is set within the organization for embracing not only the code of conduct, but respect for the law and applicable regulations. To what extent does an organization not only look to achieve good results, but to achieve those results in the right way? So it's a sum total of all of the things that an organization stands for that represents its values and purposes. So what is that then? The challenge is how do we measure it? How do we effectively gauge it? And I think we found that there are a number of things that one can do and look for. Certainly the tone within the organization. Is there a sense that people have the ability to raise their hand, to raise issues? We think that's one of the most important measures. We look at whether there's a sense of justice within the organization. Are those who are the high earners, are they treated the same way as your average employee when there's some type of misconduct? Is an organization willing to turn down a good deal from a business perspective where it doesn't make sense from an integrity perspective? If they're willing to turn down business in order to make sure that they are not tainted in their activities, that's certainly indicative. Do they discipline their employees when there are any types of misconduct? So these are just some of the things, but they begin to express the culture of an organization. What is compensated for? Are you compensated for just getting results, or are you compensated for the way in which those results are achieved as well?
Real test of a program and its culture is that the employees and stakeholders take to heart the affirmative obligation to report wrongdoing. The right organizational culture is going to be one that provides comfort to all employees that your employees will take the organization's espoused ethics and values to its decision making. This is why it's so important, since it is at the point of decision where integrity breakdowns take place. So they have to make sure, hey, we are bringing the right ethics and the right values that was espoused by the organization, we're making decisions. I think that's the essence of the appropriate culture.
In this new environment, are companies suffering from regulatory overload? And if so, we asked Gergenti, how should they respond?
I think in certain industries, we've begun to see fatigue because of the extensiveness of it. I think that's particularly true in the financial services sector. I think, between the anti-money laundering, the post-financial recession activities around Dodd-Frank, the different requirements that have been placed on them, I think there's a certain fatigue that is sent in. Companies, particularly in financial services, have spent millions and tens and hundreds of millions of dollars, billions of dollars, to be able to be compliant with the requirements that the new regulations in the new era have created. So there's no question that there's a certain amount of fatigue. I do think, and one of the things we try to emphasize in the book, is looking at compliance more as an investment and a cost. Having the right corporate culture, for example, that lends itself to an organization that is ethical and performs with integrity is also a way to make the organization in general better. embedding compliance as part of the strategy and operations of an organization by using some of the technologies and data analytic techniques that are available today, companies can be more efficient about what they do. They can make it part of their strategy and operations and look at compliance more as an investment than a cost. And to the extent that organizations are able to not only develop that mindset, but also to find ways in which they can generate efficiencies, I think that they can weather through what I've described as perhaps a regulatory and compliance fatigue.
Among the factors that contribute to the new era of enforcement is increased globalization. Gergenti and Headley discuss this evolution and what companies are doing to maintain integrity in a global economy with geographically dispersed business units, subsidiaries, and vendors.
Many organizations, and certainly some organizations, find it somewhat intimidating, and the task of responding a bit daunting, but at least for the clients I've worked at, many of them have learned that to take it a bit at a time and are dealing with it much more effectively than those that sort of just look at the whole landscape and say this is just impossible. Those that essentially chunk it and take it a bit at a time and work on those things and get them right are having an easier time of it than just saying, look at all of these things we have to worry about. Instead, they pick those really salient risks or regulations or the things they have to deal with and say, we're going to tackle those first, and then we'll just keep working through it. I think it's been a much more effective approach for them.
I think that globalization, as well as digitalization and the increase of technology, have been two phenomenon that have really fueled this new era, creating greater risks, greater challenges, and quite frankly, greater opportunities for companies. Globalization has meant that we have, in many ways, a smaller world. I see globalization as companies moving into new markets. Many of those new markets are ones that they may not have been as familiar with, where there's different cultures, ways of doing business, creating greater risks. We've seen that in companies in Brazil. We've seen that in companies in China. We've seen that in companies Eastern Europe and in Africa. There have been challenges, and that's resulted in a larger effort, both by enforcement to prosecute and investigate corruption. And we've seen that itself has become more global. So in addition to the globalization of economies and businesses, we've seen the globalization of enforcement. We've seen laws not only in the U.S. where bribery and corruption with respect to foreign government officials is prosecuted. We also see that with countries that 5 years ago may not even have had laws making the bribery of a government official a crime. And so we're seeing increased prosecutions and investigations by the China government. We've seen it by the Brazilian government. This certainly is part of globalization. There's been, if you will, a greater standardization of what it means to have integrity in the marketplace. So I think globalization has been one of the driving forces for increased enforcement, and I think it's been one of the things that companies have struggled to get their arms around in terms of effective compliance programs. Third-party risk, you mentioned, is huge. And having robust procedures and effective procedures on how to manage the risk of third parties, whether it's ventures, joint ventures, whether it's your suppliers, whether it's your vendors, all of them create additional risk. And many companies that are doing business on a global basis have tens of thousands of third parties that they have to deal with. Which of the ones are high risk? Which are the ones that deal with government officials? Which are the ones that you have to do an enhanced due diligence? When you're making acquisitions, you also have additional risk and require greater due diligence. So globalization has created incredible challenges and risks for companies.
I have a lot of conversations with chief compliance officers now, particularly those that have had a strong domestic presence or even domestic regional presence and are starting to develop a global footprint. In the context of all the things you just talked about, they suddenly start looking internally at the organization of their compliance program. and realized we'd been organized centrally with respect to compliance and highly effective. Now, as Joe had mentioned, we're moving out these new worlds. We're moving out into worlds that the risk profile is very, very different for us. There are cultural issues we don't understand. So how do we organize ourselves with respect to compliance? Will the centralized model continue the work for us? Or should we move to a more decentralized model but worry about maintaining the kinds of control that we want over the behaviors of our employees and our stakeholders, and many of the stakeholders that you had mentioned, Rich? I'm finding now that a lot of my clients are going to some sort of hybrid approach where certain things are obviously directed or guided in a central way. The values of the organization are communicated from a central location, but more at the ground level in country or in region is where they're embedding compliance professionals now to deal with some of the regional issues, because they have put people in place that understand the culture a little bit better, but with the idea that there will still be a fair amount of control centrally. But it's a big issue, though, for a lot of our clients now. How do we reorganize and make sure we're addressing all the issues that Rich just talked about?
That's all the time we have for today. We've been talking to KPMG's Timothy Headley and Richard Gergenti about the changing enforcement landscape as detailed in their newly published book, The New Era of Regulatory Enforcement, A Comprehensive Guide for Raising the Bar to Manage Risk. I'm Joe Mont, staff writer for Compliance Week. Thank you for listening.